So welcome back, guys. Welcome back to Sundays with Sarah's. My name is Sarah.
My name is Miriam.
And my name is Marissa.
And today we're recording after, I don't even know what to call it, just a very tragic incident here in El Paso, Texas. We're going to do a very brief mention of it because there's no way we can't not mention this. Well, I don't even know how to say this.
I think everyone here knows what happened, yeah. And it's been on the news everywhere, but in case you're unfamiliar with what happened in our city on Saturday, August 3rd?
10:30.
There was a domestic terrorist attack by a white male towards our community, which mm-hmm. is
83% to 85% Hispanic. This guy came from across Texas, East Texas. He came from a place called
Allen,
Texas. And he shot up a Walmart. So this was at 10:30 in the morning. That's when calls started going into the police department, and like, to paint the picture, Saturday mornings is when people go grocery shopping or doing all
their errands.
And not only that, but it's also back to school time. That's when families, even more families, go to the department store to go get their stuff. So there were, when the day started off, nobody knew what was going on. There was a lot of information going around. At the end of the day, the count was 20 people dead, about 24 injured, 26 injured. Today, sadly, that number has risen to 23 dead. 22 dead.
I guess 24
injured. And we're still getting the names of the victims released, but I'm not even sure if
I don't think so.
No, I think we're just going to leave it at that. At the Walmart, there was about maybe 1,000 people present, 100 workers, and there is an adjacent Cielo Vista mall. And so
it was just, like, it's a really terrible chaotic weekend. It was a really terrible experience to have that happen in, like, your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And, like Sarah said, there was so much misinformation, and, like, nobody knew what was happening. Like, nobody expected something like this to happen, and we were kind of talking earlier how, like, after the Parkland shooting in Florida, there were a couple of threats in El Paso, like, some people that they were threatening to shoot some of the high schools or... And not that nobody took it seriously, but, like, nothing happened. It was all a bunch of talk, and mm-hmm. so I remember that Saturday I was in my room editing the episode for this past Sunday, which we have postponed, and my sister was on her way to pick up a friend from the airport, and she got a phone call from my dad, and he told her, hey, there's an active shooter in Cielo Vista, like, just be cautious of that area. But even when she told me, I was kind of like, oh, it's probably just nothing. Like, it's mm-hmm. probably just someone... Because we have open carry in Texas, and, mm-hmm. you know, like, guns do make some people uncomfortable. And I thought it was just someone saw something, and there's, you know, I didn't think it was anything like this. And then, like, you know, time goes by, my sister's not responding, my dad's also at the store, thankfully nowhere near the area, but I started getting messages from friends here checking to see if I was okay, because I work at Target across from another mall here in El Paso, and everyone was freaking out. Like, and at that point is when I started checking Twitter and Facebook and seeing, you know, updates that were happening and news media as it was being allowed to be covered. But yeah, there were a lot of people saying, oh, there's multiple shooters, oh, they're gonna hit this place and this place. And I called out of work that day. Like, I was supposed to work at 4:00 that day, and I didn't show up. And I know at my store location, like, so many people called out. A lot of businesses were locking down, and it was just really, really terrifying. And, you know, thankfully, my sister, she was able to get her friend from the airport, come home safe. Everyone in my family was safe. But unfortunately, like Sarah mentioned, 22 people are no longer going to be with their friends and with their family. They're not going to have that opportunity anymore. And I don't know, it's just really, really terrible. Really terrible.
Yeah. How I came across the news, my phone for some reason didn't get the Amber Alert. I was in the middle of giving class, and it wasn't until I checked my phone that I saw that my boyfriend texted me saying that I should call my family, and that's very strange for me. Right away, I got my heart sank to my stomach. I was wondering, I freaked out, and I asked him what was going on. He told me there was a shooting, and right away, I called my mom, because my mom's always shopping at that Walmart. My family lives around 1 to 2 miles from that Walmart. So I'm freaking the fuck out. Luckily, I was able to get a hold of her after she didn't answer 2 times. But she answered finally, and she told me she's in Juarez and that everyone's in the home at the house with everything closed and they're fine. And I called my dad and I let him know that my youngest sister and I were fine, that we were staying over here. In the west side, and we're not gonna go that way until my mom comes and picks us up. And that was the day, but I was just still freaking out because we had to be on shutdown and all the parents were coming in and picking up their kids early. But there was a lot of misinformation, and there was stories about people being everywhere, that they're gonna attack different places, which is now we know that that was not true, but at the time we were all very nervous.
Nobody wanted to take any chances or risk putting themselves in.
Especially when we have a bunch of kids in our care. Mm-hmm. So we had to keep the kids with us, and we had to keep the doors locked and make sure that only the parents, like if it was a cousin of a friend, it had to be the parents picking up the kids. I'm sure, yes, there was. We had everyone come in and take their kids, but it's just, even just hearing something like that happen is very impactful. Like, I broke down in the middle of class. Luckily, I had my assistant teacher take over for me for a bit. But even just hearing news like that, that's just very, it traumatizes you. It traumatizes everyone here in the community. It's just horrendous.
And I remember, like, when the Parkland shooting happened, that there was a video from inside the school of the students running out. It was a very, what's the word?
Graphic?
Yeah, a very graphic video. And that was in 2017, right? February?
Yeah.
I remember I saw that video on Twitter without any sort of, like, a filter to say, hey, this is a graphic video, do you want to see it or not?
Yeah.
And I passed by, and right away it was, like, a lot of really intense imagery. And not that, like, you shouldn't be aware of what's happening, but that video, like, really traumatized me. And I have, like, I mean, before that, because these shootings have become such a, like, an everyday occurrence in America, like, I'm always thinking about, especially when I'm at work, where do I go if something happens, or what's my safety route, where do I hide, where am I supposed to, like, what, there's no plan. But when I saw that video, I felt like it gave me, like, a PTSD towards these sort of situations. And so when it started happening here, like, I felt so shocked. Like, I felt really, really afraid. And then, like, nobody knew. Like, they were barely releasing names now. They had to leave the bodies at the Walmart for the investigation. And so, like, El Paso is, like, such a community where everyone knows somebody. Like, you're all connected in one way or another, even if you've never met. But, like, you know, like,
close,
you didn't know if it was going to be someone you knew, or a friend of a friend, or a husband, or a mother, or someone that you were connected to in some way. And, like, even if it's not someone that you directly know, like, we care so much about everybody here. And so,
mm-hmm.
like, everyone's hearts were just broken for everybody.
Yeah.
And
the community showed a lot of initiative the moment
mm-hmm.
that news went out. And there was a call for blood donations, because they were also saying that during the summer there's a shortage of blood, but and even more so since there's such grave injuries, they asked for blood donations. And I was watching the news, or listening to the news, And they were saying that the buildings were being wrapped around by people in line waiting for
hours
just
to donate
blood. In the hot sun, it was around 100 degrees that day.
And people were being turned away, asked to come back the next day
to make appointments.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how many people showed up. And not only that, those people...
businesses, too, that were offering food, like the community and businesses here offering food, water, coverage in the lines, like...
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was helping.
I saw some footage of people taking pizza to the people waiting in line, which is, like, very important to be, full and to be hydrated before you go into to give blood donations. And these people were out in the sun. Also, something else that the community did is the funeral homes purchased
Operation Hope and another one, I believe, that they're going to cover funeral costs or service costs for... any of the victims that were...
Yeah. But more on the case is that it's going to be investigated as a domestic terrorist attack. And I think it's important to define domestic terrorism because that does not mean domestic as in it came from El Paso, because it did not. This person came from across Texas, but domestic terrorism means an attack... in its own nation. So this man was an American citizen and attacked the United States. It's also going to be investigated as a hate crime. The last I heard is that they're still investigating if it qualifies as a hate crime, but this
which I don't understand how it couldn't, like, just based off
all
the
information.
It's unbelievable how people, I mean, I can understand why they want to give them due process and to maintain the law, it's undeniable that he posted this manifesto, like many previous white nationalists did. He posted this manifesto on some website that I don't even want to say, pretty much just dictating what he was going to do today. Why he was doing it, because he believed that the United States was being overrun and infiltrated by Mexican immigrants. And not only that, he also mentioned that there is being a Hispanic invasion, which is stupid because Hispanics are Americans as well. Hispanics are Mexican Americans. Or But he was saying that Hispanics were invading and taking American jobs. He did not view Hispanics as Americans anymore. He viewed us as other. And that's something else that really just... I don't know how to describe it, but I never thought... I always expected, or I always felt that whenever I left El Paso, that's when I would have to worry about my safety because of the color of my skin or because of the way I speak. But now El Paso has been attacked because of the color of our skin and the way we speak. And I never knew that my bubble would be burst like that, because we've all always been conscious that we live in a bubble, that we live in a safe city. We still live in a safe city, that we know that we won't be discriminated against here because of our race. But now we were just attacked. We're still not going to let that affect us so that we live in fear, but it's just unbelievable that that would happen in my home, 2 miles from where I grew up. Okay, well, if you guys want to help, El Paso Community Foundation will waive all processing fees if you want to donate directly to the families of the victims.
The Borderland Rainbow Center is also doing, they're offering free therapeutic support Monday through Thursday, 4:30 to 6:30. The Borderland Rainbow Center is also going to have special focus talks. Today they're doing an anti-racism group, topic white supremacy and terroristic violence. On Tuesday they'll be doing a recovery group topic, the personal costs of violence. Wednesday, they'll have teen group topic, processing our feelings. Thursday will be trans youth group topic, staying safe in public spaces. Thursday, family of trans people group topic, creating family safety at home and in the world. I also know that they're UTEP's, University of Texas El Paso, they're offering counseling and support for not just victims, but anybody who feels in the area that they might need someone to talk to or some help through this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the tattoo thing, no?
Yes. West Texas, I mean, by the time this episode comes out, it'll be a couple days after, but I know a lot of local businesses are donating, like, either percentages or 100% mm-hmm. of whatever they make, you know, throughout this past weekend, some into the week, towards helping the victims and mm-hmm. the families. I know one of the banks here is offering to match upwards of $25,000 of donations. El Paso, West Texas Tattoo, they're going to be doing $60 palm-sized tattoos Friday starting at 12, and 100% of the proceeds will be donated to the Paso del Norte Community Foundation. There's a couple other helplines that you can call. The Emergency Health Network, mental health professionals are operating the Crosses hotline at 915-779-1800. So there's many more, way more resources that are available. These are just some that we're listing right now. But, like, even me, like, I still don't feel comfortable going to work. Like, I don't want to leave my house. Like, I know we shouldn't live in fear, but I'm uncomfortable. And yeah. I feel also just, like, so emotionally distraught from the situation that I can't, like, I'm going to have to. Because that's unfortunately the reality of, you know, you have to work and you have to make money to support yourself and you have to show up so you don't get fired. But I really can't imagine myself being at work today and caring about someone freaking out about their expired receipt and trying to return or price match. And yes, like, life goes on and the world is going to keep moving. But, like, for me, like, even to talk about it is very difficult. And I don't know how I'm going to process it when I'm there with my coworkers, because I've grown very close to my group that I work with. And, like, to think about putting myself in a situation like that, or if we had to experience something like that, like, when I'm at work, I'm just going to be thinking about my safety, escape routes. Like, I honestly don't know how I'm going to do it. And I can only imagine, like, people who were actually on site that day, who saw everything, who had to pass by and couldn't help people who were on the ground, like, the first responders who have to see these kinds of things, you know, the prosecutor, like, everybody that's involved here.
The trauma. Yes. Well, we decided to do today's main topic on activist art. And so I did a bit of research last night about activist art, and according to the Tate Modern is a gallery in London. Activist art is a term used to describe art that is grounded in the act of doing something and addresses political or social issues. And so the aim of activist artists is to create art that is a form of political social currency. It's about empowering individuals and communities to really encompass and express what is going on at the time.
Yeah, bring to light what.
Yeah, bring to light what is going on, what may be overlooked, or what they fear will be forgotten if it's not put into an artwork. I don't even want to talk anymore. So I'll just read. Some artists concerned with activist art are also involved in direct action, like Women on Waves Foundation, feminist art collective that runs on floating abortion clinics, carrying out abortions in places where they may not be legal. This also makes me think about the whole Guerrilla Girls, how they're a group of women who talk about feminist issues and also issues of women in the art world, and they're calling to action and always pointing out when there's something going on. They have been referred to as the conscience of the art world. There's also, I have an example here of Tania Bruguera. She has this performance called Tatlin's Whisper. She did this performance in 2008 where it's two cops mounted on horses. The horses, there's one black horse and there's one white horse, and it's a performance where these cops are moving the visitors around the gallery space, where they're ushered into one part and then moved to another. The reason this artist did this in this way is because it's really to take out of context and recontextualize the use of police force within different settings. So if you were, you would not expect a police officer to be ushering you a certain way in a certain place, especially if you're inside an art gallery. But you would expect this at a protest. You would expect this at a game or a rally. And she wants to call attention to that, how these officers may be doing this.
And it's about control, yeah, pretty much. Like, and authority and how much they use that power to them.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so Bruguera was born in Cuba in 1968 and lives and works in Chicago, Paris, and Havana. She makes these performances and installations that use silence and self-censorship as a means of both to impose and resist power, addressing the relationship between art, politics, and everyday life. Bruguera also uses performance to create direct experiences of and commentaries on political structures, appropriating the tools used by the systems of power themselves, such as, like I just said, the cops mounting horses. She doesn't simply represent political situations, meaning like she doesn't just like either paints them or puts them in a setting where they just stay still, but she also creates them by putting into motion some of the same strategies used by the political authority, which is the cops themselves. Her work frequently addresses Cuba's social, political, and economic history and expresses the resulting experiences of alienation and disorientation through the body and action. And that's about that, Tatlin's Whisper. Also, when I was doing research on this topic, I found a website that deals... It was the very first website that talks about art activism and kind of defines what it is and why it should be done. Mm-hmm. It's called the Center for Artistic Activism. And I think if you go to the website, they only have like three links. And the third link is why artist activism. And they start off with, what's this artistic activism thing all about? What's the difference between art activism and regular activism? And is it some meaning that these people just made up? So they come up with two different things, affect and effect. So through the affect part of artist activism, affect means to move emotionally or to have some sort of impact on someone's emotions feelings. And effect is what comes, like, what made this happen. And they come up with the, I think it's kind of silly, but they come up with the word, it's called affect, A-Y effect. In short, activism is the activity of challenging and changing power relations. Many ways of doing activism and being an activist, but the common elephant elephant element in an activity targeted towards a discernible. Okay, I did not even finish that sentence. Activism is activity of challenging and changing power relations, and the goal of activism is action to create an effect. And then where art comes into play with this is they simply put it down as a touch of, as an affect, where it's another form of creating a response in a person, where they simply, what's the word? Define it as something that only touches you empathetically, like a pathos kind of thing. There are some things that stood out to me in this part of the article where it states that, and I'm quoting here, that good art always contains a surplus of meaning, something we can't quite describe or put a finger on, but moves us nonetheless. Its goal, if we can even use that word, is to stimulate a feeling, move us emotionally, or alter our perception. And what I want to discuss is, do you guys really think that good art always has a lot of meaning to it?
I would say no. Like, we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier. In relation to, like, art activism, like, I guess that is, like, the goal of the artist,
mm-hmm.
to get the viewer or the audience to feel something and to kind of have, like, a more open perception of what the artist is trying to, like, relate to the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some aspects, like, yes, that is true towards artists who are also activists,
mm-hmm.
or work in an activist way. And I also was thinking about, it's going to be different. Your audience is going to be different because some art is, like, public art for the people and the community who are there. It's for the people. And some activist art is in, like, museum settings.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about it like that, I think about, like, the artists putting the work in the museum setting because they want the people in the museum, those viewers, to see what's going on around the world. And it's like, obviously, if you have the luxury to go to a museum setting, or maybe most people who go to, like, art openings or art galleries kind of have it a little bit easier than maybe people who do not have that, like, luxury. Of course, it depends on what the artist is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it is about another place that's suffering or people who are suffering. We don't know.
Yeah,
but
it makes me think a lot about the Solange performance that we saw, and how we were talking about she targeted that population specifically because it is an affluent white population that goes to Chinati and Marfa,
and people who pretty much have the luxury to be there,
mm-hmm.
and to afford it.
Yeah, and to take 3 days off from work or anything that they're supposed to do.
It kind of makes me think of, and this is not art, well, it is, music.
Yeah.
Like how Lizzo, she performed at Coachella, but a lot of her fan base, well, not a lot of them, but like a few of them were saying, like, oh, Coachella is owned by a company which donates a lot of money towards anti-LGBT or towards Trump or towards, like, parties that aren't really caring about equality. And one of her responses to it was that, like, this is, like, a platform that they're forced to hear her music to, like, have her audience, and it was, like, a way for her to put her message on a scale which would never have been opened otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But then at the same time, I think about, like, how you sent us that post about the which museum where, like, a bunch of artists were withdrawing their work.
Whitney.
The Whitney, that they
mm-hmm.
were withdrawing their work because they were donating to
I took a screenshot of it real quick for me. Tell you the guy's name very briefly because this is my pre-topic for the next.
Well, we don't have to talk about it now, but, like, that there were some artists withdrawing from the Whitney because the people who own and operate support
the gas canisters that are used to gas people here on the border. Yeah.
And so it's just, that's like, there's this line of, like, putting your work in a position where people are, people who might otherwise ignore your message mm-hmm. are forced to see it, but then also who, like, who's seeing it, will they really care, will it make it, so I feel like it's always, like, yeah, a difficult line.
Yeah.
And, like, for those artists, that was the right move, especially because I think a lot of their art dealt with, you know, kind of political issues.
Mm-hmm.
For Lizzo, like, to be putting her message on stage on a platform where it's recorded, people see it, people see someone like her on stage in a big venue like this, it gives them hope. So there's always kind of like this,
just back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to say whether yes, this is wrong, yes, this is right,
yeah,
kind of thing, without
especially,
viewing it
yeah.
from, like you said, multiple viewpoints, like.
Yeah, especially because art is so subjective as well, and that's what makes it even harder.
And I think that's what this article mentions at some point, is that, like, with activism, there's a clear message,
mm-hmm.
and with art, sometimes it's not
it's
always so
vague.
Clear. It's a little
mm-hmm.
more, yeah.
Yeah, another part in this section that caught my eye as well is that it describes art as purely something to be, like, emotional evoking or something like that, and I'm going to quote it, activism moves the material world while art moves the heart, body, and soul. And to contradict what this thing is saying, I found this piece, we started this piece in our history, and it's called Insertions to Ideological Circuits by Silo Mireles, the second, I guess. But this piece, I think we'll post a little something about this piece on our Instagram so you guys get a better view of it. But this, where is he from? I know it's gonna be in the How dare I? Oh, okay. Well, this man, he got these dollar bills. He got Coke bottles from the 60s. Well, this was during the 60s. He got these glass Coke bottles and did prints onto them. And he got dollar bills and did prints onto them as well and put them back into circulation. And what he printed on them was variations of text. And so, for example, one of the ones that said was Yankees Go Home. And he was doing a bit of the United States encroaching into Brazilian markets. And how, I mean, right now you look at Mexico, we can look at Mexico and how there's just an installation at the Rubin Center, how Coca-Cola has become so detrimental to the Mexican people because, one, it's highly addictive because of all the sugar and chemicals it has, but sometimes it's even cheaper than water to buy. It's cheaper to buy Coke sometimes, and that's, people get hooked on it, they just drink it and drink it and drink it, and there's a big diabetes problem in Mexico and in the southern United States. From the Southern Americas, and it's this encroachment and this high marketing towards this one product that this artist is fighting against. And he puts it in this time, they would recycle these glass bottles and they would go in through circulation, and more people would see it and see it. So art can also be in the material world and invoke emotion.
Activism can invoke emotion.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, activism isn't just material, and art isn't just emotion. Like, the two,
yeah,
like, they'll go very hand in hand with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to what some of the points in the article say about it.
And art, like you're saying, like, this is art that was in circulation, and maybe to some it might not be seen as an artwork,
mm-hmm.
but that was, like, the goal of the artist, to have it circulated as much as possible, and
yeah,
for it to, that was the goal of the actual bottle itself too as well.
Mm-hmm. That's something else that this article kind of talks a lot about, of art in a form, as a form of just something nice or beautiful or therapeutic, rather than acknowledging that art doesn't always have to be beautiful.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's another part that mentions that art activism as an effective image, performance, or experience is also well-suited for an age of cell phone cameras and social networks, because I mean, it's true that people don't want to be reading through everything and saying very cut and dry things. They want to see something that's more to the point, very visually striking. And that's where art comes in, art activism comes in, because it gives you the information and it gives you the imagery. Sometimes. Not all the time. There's also, art activism has been used throughout history. And I chose this one piece by Glenn Lee Gwan to portray this. This wasn't too far back. The original piece was done back in 1988. And it was this large painting that said, "I am a man." And it was depicting a quote from these Tennessee workers that were being treated as second-class citizens, where they were working in very subpar working conditions. Well, this piece by Glenn Lee Gwan originally was a painting, and what he did is he did a print of the painting, and he did two prints of this painting. You can see the painting deteriorated on one part of the diptych, and then on the other side, there's a condition report on it, and it shows every crack that happened, every little scuff, every little discoloration throughout the aging of the painting itself. And it talks a lot about how these people have not been treated any better than they were back then, because the aging,
the message is lost through age and time.
It's sometimes forgotten about what these people have and are going through. And Lee Gwan emphasizes the degradation not only of the material components of the painting, but also as a subject matter through reproduction and prolonged exposure. So this talks about the people. This talks about how these people are exposed to so many injustices, and how their own bodies are showing the effects of it. And, what do you guys think of that?
I agree. There's a reason why we're constantly reminded certain, slogans, like Black Lives Matter,
mm-hmm.
The Me Too movement,
mm-hmm.
you know, because this stuff is ongoing, and it hasn't ended. Like, you can't say that the way that people are treated has stopped if you can't speak for... Like, you can't speak for them. And so, I feel like people are like, "Oh, I hear that all the time, but I don't see it." But just because it doesn't apply to you doesn't mean that it's still not ongoing and
mm-hmm.
still happening. And that's why those movements are still alive today. And that's why our activism is still alive today as well. And this artist was showing how this piece of work, how this aged, and it didn't age well. Just like the situation that's going on, it's still going, and maybe it's still not being talked about.
Mm-hmm. So the next section, artist activism creates openings, and right here it states that artist activism is activism that doesn't look like activism and art that doesn't look like art, which I disagree with.
Yeah, and you're saying that, this article was also saying that art activism was, a positive thing, and
mm-hmm.
how, because you're reaching out to your community and so forth, but I was saying earlier, I have tried to work in, a social art setting, where I was trying to talk about fast fashion and what's going on in factories and what's going on in, not just the... what's going on with the clothes and how it's not being recycled, and how clothes is, one of the biggest parts of, landfills because of what's going on in fast fashion. And that was such a hard topic for me to talk about and to make work about, because first I didn't feel like that many people were interested at the time, and I also felt that not that many people, because I was doing a social artwork, I was trying to get people involved, and there wasn't that many people who they did want to help, but when it came down to it, they didn't really help me, or they didn't do what I wanted them to do. Just because, like, it was, like, and I don't blame them. Like, everybody has, like, their own schedule. But it's not always easy to do art activism. It's very hard to get your community involved sometimes. Sometimes dealing with the pressure of what you're talking about, like, most of the time it is a negative topic, and to have to go into the studio every day and have that topic be thrown in your face every single day is such a hard thing. Sometimes you feel that you are just one person, or you're just a group of people, and maybe nobody will listen to what you have to say. And normally the targets are, like, larger corporations, mm-hmm. governments, your city, your state, and for them to listen and, like, take you into mind, it is such a hard thing to deal with, because sometimes you feel like nobody will listen.
Yeah.
And so it's not always positive. And art activism, even though it sounds... like, good, or it sounds like you're doing
yeah.
something, it doesn't always feel like that.
Yeah. It's like trying to run in water, kind of. If you try them. It's hard. So, there's also artistic activism. It is more accessible, and I think that's true, because art activism does cross boundaries. It crosses back into the general population, and I have an example of that here, where it's a mural done by Los Dos here in El Paso. It's, I'll read you guys a little quote real quick. It's by Ramon from the duo, and it says, "We see our work as an intersection between Mexican muralism and street art. It's about reappropriating public spaces with images that are relatable to us as a community and in which we are protagonists." Which is very important, because a lot of the times when you see, like, a Mexican portrayed in mass media, they're seen as, they're sometimes a villain, or sometimes seen as lazy, sloppy, or not really important to the story. Where here in El Paso, we have this mural. We have several murals by them, but this one in particular stood out to me, especially during this time, because it depicts two young women, they represent Juarez and El Paso, and they have their hair braided together and they're back to back. Google this image, you'll find it on Vice, you'll find it anywhere. Just look up Los Dos, Sister Cities mural, and you'll see that it shows them interconnected, like the sister cities that we are. These muralists are based here in El Paso. They are a husband and wife couple. They speak a lot about the issues here in the border, how we share one large aquifer, but the El Paso side gets a lot more of the water there, when Juarez has the largest population out of the two of us, and how the relationships between us are strained because of everything that's going on politically, the border wall that's cutting across our terrain, and what they're doing with their murals is putting it up for the community to see and to let them know that they're being listened to, and to find solace in that they're not alone, that there's others out there that understand what's going on, and also to put this into the public eye, because this was published in Vice, and people around this United States read that. So something else I wanted to discuss in this article was that I think that you already kind of mentioned this, Miriam, about artist activism as a form. The way this article painted this is that the activism part is the hard part, and the art part is the easy part.
Mm.
When you talked about your fast fashion collab, what was it? Kind of.
It was a social project that multiple people were supposed to take a part of. It didn't really work out that way, but like you're saying, like I feel to me, the activism part and the art part are not two different subjects or two different things. I'm like, oh, now this is me doing the art part and this is me doing the activism part. They're both, like, the same, and I feel that they are both hard, equally as hard
mm-hmm.
to do. Like, you're putting in the hours to make whatever you need to make or so forth. It's still such a large project. I don't really separate them, and I don't think artists separate them either.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why this article says
yeah.
it like that, but
yeah, like I said before, I feel like this article was mostly written by activists rather than artists.
Yeah,
or maybe some artists, I don't know,
or just a viewer who doesn't experience either
yeah.
part of it, you know, like.
Yeah.
Because, like, the line that says, as fun as artistic activism is for doing it, it's also exciting for those people on the outside seeing it, and, like, how you guys were saying that it's, like, a fun process and pleasurable rather than, like guilt-inducing and that the activism work is, but, like, sometimes the art is still sad and it's not...
And you're still doing the research. You're
yeah.
still, you know, you still have to come about these, like, facts... And the things that are going on. And the more you learn, the more it can be frustrating. And, the more you feel that maybe you can't handle it or so.
Mm-hmm.
But you still go through with the artwork. And I feel like maybe, like, people who feel this way think because in the end the artist will get credit. But that's not the... Normally, that is not the goal of the artist.
Mm-hmm. Just to
from,
get the message
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it's mostly to get the message out.
Yeah.
And just because they are not just doing one thing or just, like, protesting doesn't mean that they aren't putting in work, doesn't mean that they're not doing their research,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that they're not getting the community involved.
Yeah, and also the consideration of the amount of time they're putting into making the actual art. Like, that takes time. If you're making prints... That takes a lot of prep. If you're making paintings, that takes a lot of prep. Murals, even more. So, art is hard, too. And here it also states that artist activism is about the long game. And here I can only... Right now, I'm only thinking about how murals, they stay up on the walls for a while. Here, recently, we had Joaquin's father.
Manuel Oliveros, I think that's his name.
Manuel Oliver. His
yeah, Manuel.
Manuel Oliver, I think.
Yeah, him and his wife were here in Juarez.
Yeah.
And also in El Paso to unveil
a mural that they painted here in support of the immigration and the whole plight that we have here going on here. So this mural talks about immigration, and it's an ongoing topic, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. Especially now, I feel like we still have to see a lot more about what's going to happen after what happened here. But what this mural did is it called out the United States, pretty much. There's an image of children behind bars, and around the children, it says... my grandmother is number, and usually it's like grandma's number one, or my grandma's the best. Here it says my grandma is number 1, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. And it said her, I guess, jail number, and that's how they're being treated. And he calls attention to that, and also there's another part of the mural where it has a young girl with a blurb on top of her, and it said, well, I've been deported, or something, that I've been deported, but now you have to deal with my mother. Because this is multi-generational. Just because you're getting rid of someone's mother, someone's daughter, someone, they still have family members here in the United States. Most immigrants that are coming here have a family member here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just some lone person, and it may be, but they're coming here because... they need help. They're trying to run away from something that's impending on them.
Yeah.
And he's...
like you're saying, like, I feel like especially here, even before, like, this incident, we have seen a lot of, like, border artists. And because we are on the border, we do see a lot a lot of art activism, whether it is done, like, on paper or a mural or a performance. Like, I think that's something we are used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, a lot of what we would see, like, at the Rubin Center,
mm-hmm.
Which is a great thing. But I feel like even more now, we'll see more artists come and do more, like, art activism in
yeah.
the future.
And I think murals are very important, especially here in the downtown area, because I often take the trolley, and whenever I take it, I always come across tourists, because the trolley is for a tourist attraction, and these tourists are from, I don't know where in Europe, but they're speaking European languages. But they're asking questions about what the murals are about. And I remember there was this one trolley ride where we passed right by the bridges. And they were taking pictures. They're like, oh, where, it's this close? I did not think it was... It's... You can walk right up to it. And it gives context for these people to see how close we are to the Juarez. And also how we feel about our connection with Juarez. We're not... about the wall here.
Yeah, and you, if you're here, you will always hear the term sister cities, like you
mm-hmm.
mentioned before, because that's how we view it here. That's how we've been viewing it. We don't view it as two separate things. Like,
we're a fluid city or a fluid community. And to end the article, artist activism as a culture approach is inherently non-violent. I mean, what's the mural going to do to you? When done right, they call to action in a positive way, like to go vote, to take charge of your community and help people and really be there for the people. And yeah, that's what
yeah. I think art activism is a good thing. I think when it's done well,
because
there's definitely activism or art activism where maybe the concept is strong, but the execution is not strong. When it's done well, I feel like it is a beautiful thing. I think that was like another thing that the article was saying, that it's like only beautiful or only meant to be beautiful, which is not true. But when it's done well and, like, you can relate to the message, like, I think that makes it a beautiful piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that a lot of art activism is now being shown in contemporary galleries and museums, and that's the type of stuff that you'll see
mm-hmm.
more than maybe, like, a nice painting or whatever.
Was that the goal?
Yeah. And that's fine. Like, I'd rather people, I don't want to say that most people who go to museums are white and rich, but that is kind of the reality
mm-hmm.
In some places.
Or the people running the museums.
Yeah, and a lot of curators and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel that that art activism is a great way to share a message.
Mm-hmm. I guess in brief.
In
brief summary, art activism is a positive thing that I think we should all take a part in, if not just to support the artists, but also
yeah.
create it ourselves if we'd like to. It's not just about making a beautiful picture. It's not just about the message. It's about a combination of both and understanding that it takes a lot to do either
yeah.
part of it.
But I also feel like you shouldn't feel pressured just
yeah.
to make art about...
activist
yeah.
issues.
Because, like I said, like I tried doing it before and it was just too heavy for me to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes I can't even look at the news... just for my own mental health, like, I put it away. And it'll be the same with art activism. If, like, we're not saying that you have to do art activism and that is, like, the only valid form of art.
Right.
But if you can, support it in the way that you can.
Yeah.
I guess that's going to wrap it up for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we just want to give our condolences to
those affected.
Yeah, those affected and to our community that we here at Sundays at Sarah's support you all. And we're here also as a resource for you guys in whatever way we can help. I can't imagine what we could say or do that would help, but we're here. Mm-hmm. We'll be strong together, the whole city. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode. And we hope to hear you, or have you hear from us in the next one.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.